Attention, please. Places for top of show. Places for top of show. Hello, and welcome to Twins Talk Theater. We are Cindy.
And Stacy.
And we're talking about theater, backstage life, and all the excitement that the audience doesn't get to see.
Enjoy the show. Welcome to today's podcast, everybody. Today we are interviewing Jeff Kaysen, an old friend of mine we met in college in 2003, maybe?
2003, sounds accurate.
2003. Since then, we've done a number of shows together at different venues, started two companies, moved to a number of different cities, had a couple weird, crazy tech weeks in... Who knows how we got through them, but Jeff's probably been one of the biggest influences on my life in theater because for years we did nothing but theater starting in college. So Jeff now works in kind of bigger theater, like outdoor fireworks show, whereas I still live in my little theater box. So yeah, welcome to the show, Jeff.
Thank you. Thank you guys for having me.
So you started getting into theater and performing when you were 5, 6, something crazy like that. You want to tell us how it all started in your head and backyard?
Oh, yeah. Well, I loved performing since I was a little kid. I would put on shows in our garage and leave all my dad's tools and stuff out in the rain overnight, which usually didn't go over very well. And a big moment for me in my life was when I was 8 years old and I went to Disneyland. It was 1992. I saw Fantasmic for the first time. And oh my gosh, this is like the coolest thing I've ever seen in my life. I want to do that when I grow up. And then it's been this crazy journey ever since, trying to get to the point where I could do stuff at that scale.
Nice. So you started as, well, in preschool you worked in, not worked, you... were at the youth department in El Segundo, and you did acting. And mm-hmm. then you went to college, and in college you went through Johnson at the University of Redlands. So what was your major in there? What was your focus?
Sure, yeah. Well, I originally went to school to be a music composition major. I got a scholarship to be a part of the music school and did that for about 2 years, but realized that I missed theater. And the idea was, what if we put on a musical at the university? And at the time, there was a theater department that put on plays, and there was a music department that put on operas, but nobody really did musicals. The word on the street is the two departments didn't get along, so they didn't want to have to collaborate that much.
Yeah, it was pulling strings to do the operas.
Why do I feel like that's like so many different colleges and universities? It's crazy.
Yeah, your university didn't get along with your... conservatory either.
After I left, they split, which was ridiculous, but yep.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty common story. And what was so funny is the University of Redlands had a musical theater major, but they had stranded all these poor kids who chose it as their major and had no outlet to do shows. And so my friend and I, we went and started a club just so we could start organizing funding around it and put on our first show, which was Godspell. In 2004, I think it was. And it was at that moment that I knew I wanted to change my major. As much as I loved music, putting on shows was more fun and scary and adventurous and all those great things. I have so many stories I could tell about our college shows. That's where I wanted to head. And so I joined the Johnston program, which is a program where you can design your own emphasis. And changed my major to nonprofit arts management.
Yeah, which was one of the more normal majors through Johnson.
Yes, it was.
Then I think I joined on the second show, which was...
Into the Woods. Yeah, we met. Were we painting trees?
Yeah, you came to the theater and asked, can we build a set? And Dan said, Stacy, go figure out what the music kids want and build them a set. And... So we built half the set in the fraternity's garage, and my parents came with their tools, and we missed a couple classes to get the show up, and then we did I don't know how many shows after that, but
Yeah, that all sounds about right. I mean, everything we put together back then was so hacked.
Yeah, you bought a bunch of thick foam that was very flimsy and said, these are trees. And mm-hmm. I went, oh God, those are never going to stand up.
Yeah, well, I also fancied myself a set designer. And I remember I gave you some drawings, I think, on the back of a napkin.
Probably.
Literally on the back of a napkin that had no structural integrity whatsoever. So, So I appreciate you making sure I didn't kill anybody in those early years.
Yeah, that was...
Including yourself.
Including myself.
Yeah. Well, exactly. He did sprain his ankle once. You jumped off some steps at the chapel and fell down.
I do get excited about explaining my artistic vision, yes.
So then outside of that, we graduated and we started Redland Civic Light Opera. We did a couple shows there.
Yeah, so that was such a cool story. You know, we had this club. We were doing musicals. And at some point realized, oh my gosh, our shows are outselling the operas and the plays that the university is doing. What if this was an actual thing? And, you know, we were on board, you know, working together and very early on to kind of put together this thing. It ended up being my senior thesis was the business plan for Redland Civic Light Opera.
We designed the set during the set design class. Yeah, we met a local restaurant to come up with plans and ideas.
Yeah, and out of that, I think it was, 6 months later, we put up our inaugural production of Man of La Mancha.
Yeah, a show I've still been trying to get people to do. It's a really good show.
It is. It's awesome.
We had some good people. So yeah, that was a huge learning curve. They don't really teach you how to actually start a company and... do all of that stuff. So there was a lot of figuring out, I think, for both of us. I remember when we started selling tickets and I was like, oh my God, we sold 100 tickets. And, you know, looking back, I'm like, that's nothing. But at the time it was like, oh my God, it's exciting.
Oh yeah. There's so many cool milestones there. I think, you know, we were 22 when we started this thing. Most 22 year olds have the good sense to start something small and then grow it. And,
yeah. Or don't start something.
Or don't start something. Get some experience first. But I think our first year we brought in like $500,000 in revenue. But we had no idea what to do with it. And I think, you know, market forces and inexperience and just the craziness of trying to produce theater at that level for the first time. It was a learning experience for all of us. It didn't quite work out, but I often refer to that time as my master's degree in real life.
Oh, that's a good way to put it.
And I'm sure you probably have similar thoughts.
Yeah.
What's funny is we actually talked about that in our first podcast, how like after we graduated from college, I went on and got my master's and Stacey started this company. So I think it's kind of perfect. Like my master's just happened to be inside a university setting and your guys' master's just happened to be in a really awesome office space in downtown Redlands. So
and a theater, which and was a high school, I mean, more which amazing was a gorgeous, than our college university theater.
And yeah. I think we both ended up in the same amount of debt.
Yeah. I got a lot of scholarship grants, I'm just saying.
Yeah, oh, so you probably fared better than we did.
I think you're still paying on your debt too, right? So
I paid mine off last summer. No, I'm good.
Yeah. Took a couple years.
It took a while.
But yeah, you came out and worked on some shows for that and you know, we pulled a lot of people together. We decided to do comic strips all around all the borders with a Sharpie. That was a bright idea of ours.
Yeah, very, very accurate and very stupid.
That took a lot of hours and a lot of Sharpies.
And a lot of inhaling fumes. Yeah.
It was a huge, I mean, just the differences between our first show and the third show and the way we figured out like how to deal with people, how to pay bills. how to just manage people and all, I think was a huge, huge turning thing. Then after that, you moved back to El Segundo and I moved out to the LA area. And then I guess the next one was El Segundo Broadway in the Park.
Yeah.
And I worked on that the first couple years as a board member and volunteer and stuff. But it also had what Twin loves, we did it in a baseball park, which was not the first plan. Our first plan was somewhere else in the park and it eventually moved to a baseball park.
Yeah. Yeah. So, after Redland Civic Light Opera, I corporate theater for a little bit, but it was boring and I hated working at a desk. And thankfully, Stacy was always up for entertaining my ideas of wanting to start something new. And so Broadway in the Park, really, I have Redlands to thank for that, not only in my experience with Redland Civic Light Opera, but Redlands has some really neat summer art programs.
And the Redlands Bowl is one of the longest running art programs in the
I believe that
West Coast or this side of the year or something.
Yeah, it really is a fantastic program. And of course, they have a full season similar to a miniature Hollywood Bowl with orchestral concerts and plays and ballets, etc. But they did put on a full-length musical one of the weekends, and it was just such a cool experience. I remember the first one I saw was in the middle of a heat wave. I think it was 115 or 118. It was something ridiculous outside.
Rolling trees.
Yeah, rolling blackouts that day, like... I think we all just, I sat in my car in air conditioning because I couldn't even be in my apartment. But then you see the show starts, and you go, this is still cool. Imagine what this would be like if it wasn't 118. And I saw many events over at Redlands Bowl, and they were so cool, just being out there under the stars with the community, having your picnic dinner. I mean, all those things you love about Hollywood Bowl, you got, but in this local setting. And I thought, what if we were able to take that idea to El Segundo and put on a fully staged musical outside?
Yeah, the first year we did that, we did Sound of Music.
We did. Sound of Music was our first show.
Sound of Music. So we did it on a baseball field, so we didn't have an amphitheater to play with. We had to bring in everything.
Lights,
sound, platforms, dressing rooms. I think everything was covered in a nice red dust.
Oh my gosh, yeah. That infield dirt, was Cheeto-colored dirt. My costumer tried to murder me about 14 times.
But that was in... I think we had a... It wasn't a heat wave. It was extremely cold that year.
Yeah, we originally had concessions, you know, set up for lemonade and popcorn. And at the last minute, we said, no, that's not going to work. We need hot chocolate.
Yeah, lots
and
of it.
Apple cider and these sorts of things. And so we shifted gears real fast, but we did make a lot of money in get rentals that first year. So it kind of...
We were freezing and had every blanket possible on us trying to get things done.
Yes.
But it did work out, and one of the people that we met during Redland Civic Light Opera actually was the conductor, I think, for Sound of Music?
He was. He was our music director and conductor. The first year, we decided to have a live orchestra outside, which, as you can imagine,
they
is quite a challenge.
They love having instruments out
in
the weather.
Oh my gosh, they had to retune every...
Yeah, like an intermission before yeah. the show.
Exactly. And so we did it the first year, and Nolan did an amazing job. It sounded really, really good. But for subsequent years, we realized it's just not feasible to keep doing live music in this way, in this climate. So ultimately, we went to tracked shows.
Yeah, much easier to cue things off of tracks and have tracks early enough and cheaper than live people.
Yes, although it took us a while to learn to use the right technology with tracks, too. At first, we were queuing it from iTunes, and so sometimes the track wouldn't play or it would start over at the wrong point. so we had some fun there until we got some sense and got QLab into the mix.
Yeah, QLab makes it much easier, but how did we know? We hadn't done this before. It seems to be the way we do things. Try it and see what works.
Exactly.
And that lasted a couple years. I don't think I did the final show, but I worked on a couple shows there. I think, how many shows did you end up doing, or years where you did it every summer?
Yeah, so Broadway in the Park ran for 5 years, but we did 6 shows because there was 1 year where we did an indoor show around Christmas time.
Christmas time.
It was a Christmas carol that we worked on together.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, 5 years out in the park, and it really was just a lovely event. The community, I think, really embraced it. Once we hit our stride, we started to find ways that we could use an outdoor space to our advantage. Often you think of the disadvantages that you don't have any rigging, you don't have line sets, but you also have unlimited sky, right?
Yeah.
And you have this big outdoor area. And so eventually we started designing to complement the space rather than to try to make up for its weaknesses.
See? And that.
My twin likes these.
I'm getting a vote of approval here.
Yes. And I just had this discussion yesterday in Philadelphia with my postmortem. We were talking about how if you have this gorgeous space, you're outside, you're in the open. Like, what shows can you do to use your advantage and, you know, just make it so much better? I don't know. I interrupt. Go on. No, I appreciate this.
No, that's great. And I absolutely agree. Yeah, so, you know, we started integrating some cool stuff. You know, we had Joseph in the Technicolor Dreamcoat, and during the Pharaoh scene, we had a giant Pharaoh's head on a hydraulic lift 35 feet into the air.
Yeah, it appeared behind the backdrop.
Yeah, it just kind of showed up, which was really cool. Wizard of Oz, we had the wizard again on a lift, and it was this whole mesh thing that appeared and shooting off CO2 cannons everywhere on the set. It was pretty fun.
We had to get, you know, the witch had to melt somehow. We had to block that transition.
Yep, exactly. And then our last show was Singing in the Rain, and we built a rain system that was custom designed to work in an outdoor space. And not be obvious, like, oh, look, there's the rain system. Mm-hmm. So some cool technical engineering challenges, but ultimately, I think things that really played to the space and worked for the kind of theater we were doing there.
Yeah, I think they all turned out great. Then after that, I was still at the Norris, and then you came to the Norris and you did a couple shows there.
Yeah, the 2 years of freelancing. It was my nomadic years.
Wandering around doing shows. That's how Twin lives. You did a number of things around the South Bay. I didn't get to see some of the ones in Redondo Beach area with Pops.
Mm-hmm. In addition to producing and directing, I've always had a love for technical theater. And lighting design was always just a huge passion of mine. And so when I was freelancing, I started out as a lighting designer, but would often somehow end up doing two or three different departments by the end of the show.
Usually,
right?
Work together. Well, you always wanted to do projections, and so you kind of had to work with set to figure out projections, mm-hmm. to figure out lighting.
Right. And then, you know, I made a suggestion in the production meeting of a set designer. And then it's like, well, do you want to be the set designer? I'm like, sure. So so it was a cool experience trying out all these disciplines. But projections was the one that I didn't anticipate falling in love with. And it's one that I really came to enjoy. And, you know, of course, as we know, it's a discipline that's relatively new.
Mm-hmm, especially in the theater world.
To theater. Yeah. You know, it's can be cost prohibitive. Obviously, there's a lot of complication in making it work well and not be chumpy, mm-hmm. on stage. But I just learned about it. I learned all I could, and especially seeing it starting to be done on Broadway, be done in the theme parks. I wanted to pick that up, and I ended up doing much more projection design as a freelancer than I did any of the other disciplines, and really spent the last few years honing my craft in that area.
Do you use QLab for your projections? Do you use a different program?
We do. I didn't start out using QLab. I started out using something called ProPresenter and then VideoPresenter and tried a bunch of stuff. But, you know, QLab 3 has some really great features in there, but doesn't have the complexity of like media servers like D3 or Green Hippo or anything like that. And none of the shows that I'm doing require that sort of complexity. And so QLab, has been great, and it can live on my laptop, mm-hmm. And I can just, you know, have projections will travel. It works pretty well.
Yeah, I just started trying to learn, and by learning, I mean push buttons, and I'm like, great, yeah, mm-hmm. Let me load this file, and then call people and say, how do I make it fade in? How do I make it fade out? Great, how do I change the size of this image?
Right. Yeah, that's one of the misconceptions about projection design in theater is that, you know, look how easy it is. I can set up a projector in my conference room and see things on the wall, mm-hmm. or on the screen. So surely it's that simple. And it's not. It is as robust a discipline as any of them, as lighting design, sound design, scenic design, costumes, etc. And it requires some serious equipment if you want to do it well. I was very fortunate that I was working for a company at the time that talked them into investing into some high output projectors and said, I'll bet I could make you some money.
You guys were using it weekly to do things. So
we were. We were. So it served the interests of the company. But I said, I think I can make some money out in the rental market. To rent projectors through any of the major companies, you know, like you go to VER, it'll cost you two or three times as much as what I was pricing it at. And ended up creating kind of a cool cottage industry where we broke into the regional theater market where they could not otherwise afford to do it. But we were making it affordable. And because we didn't have the overhead of a rental company, it was still profit. And this company that participated with us had a nice little side business going.
Yeah, it's always good to bring in money and not have to go all the way up to VER to rent something. Because I had to go up there a couple times and be like, I need the new adapter. And I have to drive all the way up here to get an adapter from you because you sent me the wrong one. Mm-hmm. Or something like that. So it was great to have you local to be like, we need stuff. I'm going to drive down to El Segundo. I'll be there in 20 minutes and pick it up. So with the projection, it's not just knowing how to project, but you had to figure out how to build whole movies, and it's not just an image and then a second image. So how did you figure out building whole movies to project?
Yeah. So developing the content, you know, again, when I was a kid, I was interested in movies, right? And film. Mm-hmm. And so I knew interesting content wasn't just still images. It was things that are kinetic, things that move.
Draws and, attention, keeps your eye. Mm-hmm,
yeah. And for years, I had done a lot of editing of just, you know, video clips for several companies I worked for. I put together all of their media and promotions, etc. So I had an idea about writing and editing for those kinds of things. And I thought, well, could I translate this to a animated realm? And so I started learning animation and working primarily with Motion and Final Cut Pro and doing things in layers. And I'm by no means an animator the way that, you know, Disney or Warner or Universal or, you know, whoever, DreamWorks has animators. But, you know, I just taught myself how to create some cool looks that work well in concert with the other designs on a show. And have had a wonderful opportunity to try out different things on a lot of different projects and really build that up. So yeah, it's kind of two sides of it. And I've been pursuing both sides, the content development side, as well as the technical implementation in the field side.
Yeah, that's one thing I was trying to explain when she's like, well, instead of a set, we'll just have projections. It'll save money. I'm like, you still have to hire a person who knows how to put all that together and physically build it. It's not just plug and play. You don't just, I have a projector so I can do projections. I'm like, I can put a still image up on the screen.
Right.
Not what anybody wants to see.
And you know what makes projections interesting, I think, in theater is the concept of mapping. So it's not just projecting onto a screen or onto a backdrop, but it's forming and shaping your projections onto physical pieces that already exist to add more interest and energy than there might otherwise be if they were just static pieces, right?
I remember when
that's exactly what we do at Luma up in Binghamton. Is it's a projection mapping festival where we map two sides of buildings and alter our projections to the building.
Yeah, I think so. I sent you a link on that.
Yeah.
The first time, well, not the first time we went to Disneyland, because we went, I don't know how many times, but the first time it was, I think, the Christmas show or their 50th anniversary. It's something, and they mapped for the first time It's a Small World.
They did,
and
yes.
And I think we watched three times at night, and we had to figure out where the projections came from and how that all worked, and you were like jumping up and down, and we'd go do stuff and come back to watch the next time they did it. And,
oh, I couldn't believe it. Yeah, at the time, I had never seen anything like that. I know it's been a discipline and art form that's, I know in Europe, has been done a lot more than in the U.S. I know France has some real amazingly talented artists who have been mapping.
On the side of buildings?
There's mapping
one
buildings
that has a dragon.
And architecture. Yeah.
I forget where that's at, but the dragon one is amazing.
Mm-hmm. But we've been seeing in the last several years, you know, incredible artists here in the States as well, and see this technology being integrated more and more. And, you know, it kind of flows downhill. So it starts, you know, it's financially out of reach for everybody, but the biggest companies or festivals. And now we're starting to see it, you know, become a little more democratized, I guess, as the technology is more accessible. But yeah, some really cool stuff. And you can really have a lot of fun with mapping. We mapped set pieces, and they had these moving blocks. And so not only were we mapping to the blocks where they were, but we were also tracking with the block signs. Very similar to what they did for An American in Paris, that recently toured through. And so always like trying to play with new methods of mapping. My most recent thing, I did a production of Oliver where we were doing projection onto scrims and trying to sync up the action of actors lit behind the scrim with the projection in front of the scrim. And then there's a project I'm working on now where we're doing multi-layered projections. So LED video wall behind the actors, and then projecting onto a scrim. So you have multi-dimensional projections.
Wow.
That sounds really cool.
A lot of information there. What project is that?
That's a new project that I am working on. It's a theatrical venture that I'm developing. Excellent. Called Soundstage. We're looking at a 2018 opening, but essentially we're trying to take movie musicals and present them in a whole new immersive way live on stage. So it's a mix of live actors, 360-degree digital projections that surround the audience, so on the walls and the ceiling of the theater, and interactivity between our audience's mobile devices and the live show. So we will have show integration, both passive integration where their phones light up or react to things in the show, or active where they get to participate either through augmented reality or through participation in like gamified platforms and apps that then cause things to happen in the theater during that experience.
So for that, you have to build an app that people download when they get in and then,
Yeah, exactly.
Now you're building apps. Everyone wants you to put your phone away for a show and you're like, ooh, take your phone out.
Well, that's the thing. We want to change the game. I mean, I am really passionate about theater and particularly theater education. And, you know, I think all of us in the industry have seen for years and years that the audience for live theater is aging out, that there's a disconnect.
Problem we all have come upon that they're aging out and disappearing and the young people go to the movies for $15, don't come see theater.
Right. But live experiences are still very much a part of the cultural engagement of young audiences. While there is digital media and you can stay home and watch Netflix or Hulu or Amazon, and that is a big part of the engagement with media, you know, you have these experiences like, you know, you can go see movies in the Hollywood Forever Cemetery, or you can go to For the Record and see kind of that movie mashup with popular songs, which is an immersive experience. Recently, there was a program called Delusion, which was like a horror film, but it's like this immersive live theater experience where you are part of the action. And so we're starting to see that people are taking different approaches to that theater experience, and young audiences are responding, but musical theater has been way behind, I think, in catching up. And so what we're looking to do is find a way to break down some of those barriers, make it less stuffy, less expensive, and much more engaging. And I think the digital device is, you know, part of your left arm or your right arm.
It's very true. It's never more than a couple feet away from me.
Yeah. So why not find ways to integrate that into the experience rather than disassociate it from the experience? But this is pretty new. I mean, all the technology we're doing has been used in some form of entertainment on its own somewhere, but I don't know if it's all been integrated together, and especially not around musical theater.
Yeah. Rocky Horror Picture Show is, it reminds me of that, where you watch the movie and the people are up on stage and there's call out lines and feedback lines, but that's a very small niche of people who actually go see that. Definitely the younger audience members, but that's what it reminds me of.
Yeah, it's
maybe not so weird as Rocky Horror.
Yeah, probably not. But yeah, I mean, I think people love that mix of the live and the film. Hollywood Bowl has been successful in showing these movies that people love, but then adding a live performance element, the live orchestra, the live singers.
Yeah, we watched Bugs Bunny. We went and watched a Bugs Bunny one where they had the live orchestra there. Mm-hmm. We've watched a couple of Zelda concerts or Legend of Zelda concerts where it's the live orchestra playing, and then they have clips of the games or whichever on the TV. And it's always cool to be like, oh yeah, I remember when that happens in the game, and then but to see the whole stage full of a live orchestra.
Yeah, so this is like that concept except flipped. So if it's the movie's the central part, and then there's all the live action that enhances it. This is the live performance is the central part, but we use cinematic environmental projections and technologies and participations to make our audience feel like they've stepped through the screen into the movie.
Very interesting. And then I guess you have to have surround sound and everything too, which... the noises have to come from the right area of the, not just the stage, because everything that you'll be sitting in is a stage.
Yeah, exactly. And so the venue that we're starting in actually does have surround sound built in.
Perfect.
Which is pretty cool. But we will be using a lot of point source audio. We will have actors appearing in different parts of the house. And of course, you can't have all the sound coming through the main speakers. It won't make sense to your brain, but also you'll get a ton of feedback.
Yes.
And so, yeah, we will have sound and lights and projection and action happening in various parts of the theater to truly make it immersive.
So if you're doing it in the theater, all your audience are naturally facing the stage.
Yes.
Is that going to be an issue with people having to turn around, stand up, get in the way?
We're not going to have action happening like at the back of the house for a prolonged period of time. Otherwise, everyone's going to get like more back pain.
Right? Yeah, cramps in their neck.
Yeah. So it's more about just being able to look up and down to your left and to your right and be totally immersed in the storytelling. Yeah, like theater, a lot will be happening on the stage, as is typical. But we will have all these cool other elements that happen all around you so that you truly feel like you're in it.
Very cool. I know that's a project that you're starting. It's the first time actually I heard about it was today. What is the project? You have a project that opens on the 7th, I believe. What is that one?
I do. So this is childhood dream come true. So being 8 years old.
And in your hometown.
In my hometown. Yeah, being 8 years old, seeing Fantasmic, wanting to do it. You should talk to my parents sometime. I was in middle school, I tried to pitch a Fantasmic in a park, kind of a Fantasmic knockoff.
I think you even had some music that you composed.
Oh, I did. I wrote music. I had scripts. I even had a sponsorship plan. But
because that's what normal kids do.
Yeah, totally. So I'm working on a very fun project called Celebrate a Firework Spectacular. Earlier, we were talking about...
Your eyes just got really big.
I know.
Nobody can see this, but
I get so excited about it. So this is a project that is honoring the city of El Segundo Centennial. 2017 is 100 years for El Segundo. And this is the town I grew up in. And so about 7 years ago, I had this realization. It was one of those shower thoughts that said, you know
ones.
What? Yeah. Oh, absolutely. It said that El Segundo is turning 100 soon. And how cool would it be if we celebrated with a spectacular, something really big that, we as a community could, to celebrate the history that we have and celebrate where we're headed as a community. And so over the intervening years, I pitched it to some city leaders. And finally, about 2 years ago, I did a formal pitch and amazingly, they said yes.
Always the best.
Yes, that they would love to see this happen. And so we got some corporate sponsors on board, Chevron, Mattel, Continental Development Corporation, and the Lakers, just to name a few, who helped provide the funding to make it happen. And so we have this awesome Disney-style fireworks spectacular happening, which combines lighting, music, pyrotechnics, and projection mapping. We're mapping the front of El Segundo High School to tell this story.
Very nice. You've worked in fireworks before. I know you and I both went out and volunteered setting up fireworks because you were always so excited about it. So how did you get the fireworks involved? I mean, you've always liked fireworks. So did you call up the people you used to work with? Did you go through a company? Did you help design how the fireworks, like what fireworks shot off when?
Yeah. So, yeah, you're referring to about 10 years ago is when I got involved with Pyro just as a hobby.
Yeah.
I started working on shows with Pyro Spectaculars and did several shows. You came out for a show or two, I think.
Yeah, I think so. You got, your dad went out with a couple, did things.
Yeah, I pretty much roped all my friends into doing it once I took a date.
Yeah,
that's pretty much what you do.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I am working with Pyro Spectaculars. They're a great company. They supply all the product for the Disney shows. They do the Olympics when they're in town. They do Super Bowl halftime shows. They do the Macy's fireworks show every year. And so they are one of the major pyro companies, and they're doing an incredible job. So it is a collaboration. The pyrotechnic design. Well, actually, why don't I do this? I'll take you to the beginning of how a show like this is put together.
Yeah, from a concept. I mean, I know how to do theater, but this is much bigger than that.
Yeah, and it's so different. And full disclosure, I have no idea if this is the way that it's supposed to be done. I made up this process, but this process has seemed to work. So
it's good. So I have to tell you, of all the places I've worked, I feel like it's kind of like that at every production company I've worked at. You're like, well, we're going to try something new and we're not really sure how this works. So this seems like a good way to start this one. So,
yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think everyone has the flexibility to find the thing that kind of works for them. Although sometimes I've made up the process and it went horribly wrong. And I'm very grateful that this process has actually worked pretty well. Knock on wood, we still have a week and a half until we open. So yeah, with a fireworks show, it's different because in 15 minutes, we're trying to tell this story. You don't have the time that you have in a show or like a live play or a movie to tell the story. And we really wanted to honor El Segundo, our founding as a Standard Oil Company town, celebrating our natural beauty and, you know, like the blue butterfly. Mm-hmm. Is and native to El Segundo.
The sand dunes, the beach.
Yeah, the beach culture in the 50s and the 60s, El Segundo was a part of a cluster of communities that was pivotal in setting the beach culture that the rest of the world got into, right? Now, beach volleyball was invented right next door in Manhattan Beach and popularized there. Wow. The Beach Boys were from Hawthorne, our neighbors to the east. And so we were all part of that group of communities that created the California beach culture mid-century. El Segundo has made an outsized impact on the rest of the world. Urosari was the swim coach here at El Segundo High School. He went on to coach the Olympic teams, the men's water polo Olympic teams in the 50s and the 60s. And his son, I think, was an Olympian as well. George Brett, a baseball Hall of Famer, went to El Segundo High School. And then, of course, the Lakers and the Kings are both headquartered in El Segundo.
For such a small little quiet nice city. Some mm-hmm. important stuff.
Yeah, so much cool stuff. Mattel is headquartered here. Our history of aviation, Howard Hughes tested a lot of his stuff here, and of course Los Angeles Airport being directly to the north has played a major part in aerospace. Boeing, Northrop Grumman, Raytheon, a lot of big aerospace companies have had, you know, a major presence here. And then most recently, SpaceX. SpaceX was founded in El Segundo.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. It was in El Segundo for a few years, and then they expanded and moved to Hawthorne by the Hawthorne Airport. So the story of El Segundo is really the story of this tiny town that most people don't know about, but this small town has made an outsized impact on the rest of the world. And celebrate is a celebration of those 100 years and what we've done so far.
Nice. So how do you translate that to a 15-minute projection, music, fireworks show on the side of a building?
You know, there are so many things we could show off and you know, kind of present in this show. I wanted to distill it down to what are some of these iconic things that make El Segundo, El Segundo. And so once I figured out the different segments we would do. I'm such a spreadsheets nerd. I actually put together a spreadsheet and created like an elapsed time in one column, knowing that I wanted this to be about 15 minutes. And then I laid out all the big segments, and then I decided what are the little sub segments that should be in the big segments. And then I would imagine it in my head and like make up my own music in my head and just sing it through. And I remember I was at work, bored at the computer, using my phone as a stopwatch. And then I'd sing through about as long as I felt like I would want to pay attention to that segment. And I'd look and be like, oh, that's about 20 seconds. And then I'd write down 20 seconds and then I'd move on to the next one. So I ended up kind of scripting the show with the time in mind from the very beginning. And I've seen enough Disney fireworks shows that I
we'll have them all memorized. You sung to me while we, you know, stood in the parking lot because we couldn't make it into the park on time.
Yes, that is something I've done. So I just kind of knew the pace and the flow that a show like that should have to tell the story, but tell it in a way that's quick and isn't just too ponderous in any one point. And there we are. That was kind of the foundation of what we did. And then from that spreadsheet, I just created different columns. So I had notes for my composers, Jason and Nolan. Here's the kind of music that I'm thinking. So if we're celebrating Small Town USA, it should feel kind of like Main Street Disneyland Americana, right? And space, I wanted it to be like crunchy. I know crunchy is an adjective you don't usually use with music, but it's like,
or with space,
but it's like electric guitars and very kinetic and very energetic and you know, kind of like Iron Man. Sometimes I would reference other movies to give them an idea of what we were after. And so we had story notes, we had music notes, we had pyro notes, and from there we continually developed it out into the show that we have now.
So since no one element can be finished before you start another element, because obviously time, there's just not enough time to do that. How did it work? Like when you have a script and everyone's working off of the same script, but you were creating the script and then creating the images and creating the music that had to all work together. So how did that work? Did you create most of the video and then give it to Jason and Nolan Livesey and they matched it, or everything was brand new? How did you get it to all work together while everybody works at the same time?
Well, this was a different process from theater, from doing a theatrical show that already exists, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously, when you're creating something new, you probably experience a lot of these similar things. In that, it was so collaborative. There were so many iterations, you know, we truly were going back and forth on these things. And I knew that music needed to be the foundation. Ultimately, the principal storyteller on the show is the music, even though it is a fireworks spectacular.
But the music's carrying it along. It tells the story.
Exactly. Because, you know, if you see a show at Disneyland, a fireworks show at Disneyland, you may have a good view, you may not, right? So you may not see the castle projections, you may not see some of the special effects, but you know, you recognize in the music what Disney property they're featuring at mm-hmm. any given time. The music is what connects you to the nostalgia and the memories. And then the fireworks are the dancers, they're the actors that dance to the music, but the music is the story.
A good way to put it. Good job.
And so in the same way, we knew we wanted to tell the story through music, and so music is where we started. Not that we didn't start working on other things, but music had to be the foundation of this building. Mm-hmm. So Jason and Nolan did mock-ups of the music, and they would submit it back, and I would give notes based on what we were trying to do with the story. They would come up with great ideas where I said, I didn't think of it that way, but that really works. And through many, 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 many iterations, we started to get it kind of solidified. And once the music was mostly in place, then we started thinking, what do the fireworks do with this? What do the projections do with this in lighting? We kind of, at the tail end, started giving some of that back to Jason and Nolan so they could see it and make any tweaks that they wanted to make. But yeah, ultimately, music ended up being the foundation of the whole show.
And Jason and Nolan, not only have you worked with them before and they're amazing, but they also are big fans of Disney and soundtracks. I know a couple of the CDs I have of theirs, movies just play in my head when I listen to it. And they didn't, the soundtracks I have aren't from movies, but they have very, very epic, very moving music. So
they do.
You sent me some of the tracks and I sat there on the couch and listened to the whole thing. And at the end, Kai's like, did you just listen to a Disney show? And I was like, kind of. That's the plan.
Yeah, they are wildly versatile. You know, as film composers and arrangers, they have to be, right? Because they'll get any type of project. And their skill in that really played to this show, because they were able to evoke these different feelings and emotions across 100 years through the music. I think one of the cool things we did is we actually created an album. The album is already finished and mastered and has gone to print now.
But we're going to have to get one of those.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
It's going to be excellent.
Yeah, it'll be available as a CD or for digital download. But the album stands alone as its own piece. You know, as cool as it is to have the fireworks set to their music, this album, you can feel all these different eras and the cool moments of El Segundo's history through the music. And of course, because of their connections, we were very fortunate to get the best of the best. So we recorded the album at Warner Brothers.
Very nice.
About a month and a half ago with the Hollywood Orchestra.
Yeah, it sounds amazing.
Yeah, we were there and they're pointing out, oh, yeah, that guy played trumpets on Rogue One and that guy did. And it was just so cool. I
hope actually, you took lots of pictures.
I took pictures and it was really cool. I got to bring my dad.
Oh, I bet he loved that. Because your dad's a musician. He plays in pits all over the area.
Yeah. Yeah, my dad's a musician and, you know, had such an influence on me getting into music when I was a kid. So to get to share that with my dad was really something else.
That is excellent. Okay, so now you have the music and you have this story outline. Did you create all of the images and projections, or did you work with someone to do the mapping and projections that you're going to do on the front of the you said the bell tower, I think, at the high school?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I created all the content that we're using to map. And so this is kind of a down and dirty technique, but it's worked a lot for shows, is I just went and took a picture of the bell tower.
From then, roughly where you'll be projecting from.
Yeah. And then just created all my content so that template exists as a semi-transparent layer in all the stuff that I build. And then when I'm ready to finally export it, I just take away the temp layer.
Yeah, like you said, it's down and dirty. That's a great idea.
Yeah, because I mean, the formal way would be to actually get architectural drawings of the building and do it that way. But why?
Yeah, that's a lot more time. You'd have to then draw it up and get it all accurate and measurements. And who knows where the architectural drawings are for that building.
Exactly. It's probably buried in UCLA's library somewhere.
Yeah. So, yeah, smart. So you did all of the design work.
Mm-hmm.
So how did it work putting in the fireworks?
Yeah. So we're working with Pyro Spectaculars, and they have a pyrotechnic designer that is working with us on all of it. So I gave our designer the music and all the animations, the finished animation, so we can see what's happening story-wise, as well as, you know, notes of here is where animation should be here, or I'm sorry, where pyro should be and where I don't want pyro, because it's our narrator talking, for example. And so he developed it all as a kind of like a pre-visualization. So then I can look at that pre-visualization to the music, to the animations, and say, oh, I like that effect. I don't like that effect.
Oh, so he can like build it on a computer and you can hit play.
Yep.
Oh, I was wondering how people design that. It's like you can't just shoot off fireworks and be like, nope, don't like that one.
Yeah. Yeah. Everything can be mocked up. And then we make our final edits, but I mean, they're experts. They know. I mean, he was the designer for the opening of the Harry Potter world here at Universal in Hollywood.
Yeah, that the pictures of that were very impressive. The lights, the projections, the fireworks.
Yeah, so the edits don't have to take it too far off of the good work they've already done. And yeah, but, you know, with pyro, you get to rehearse everything else. You don't get to rehearse pyro. It's so expensive. So we don't actually see the pyro live until the day of the event. So the pre-visualization is a very critical component to make sure that the pyrotechnics work with the story.
Yeah, that's going to be exciting, too. Hopefully you videotape it all, since I can't be there the night.
Oh, we will.
definitely. I think I'm coming one of the rehearsal nights, but like you said, I won't see the pyrotechnics, but I can see the projections and the music and probably the confused people trying to drive down the street. Everything's blocked off. That's always fun.
Absolutely. We're probably going to freak some people out during our rehearsals.
Yep. That's always good. Are you selling tickets to this, or is it open to everybody?
So this is open to the public. It's free for anyone to attend, although there is a VIP section where people can purchase tickets. And it's actually a part of a whole day event. So there will be concerts in Library Park in the afternoon leading up to the fireworks show. And then the fireworks show is kind of the cap, or as Disney says, the kiss goodnight at the end of that events.
And Library Park is just right across the street from the Bell Tower, right? So mm-hmm. It's all kind of localized and right there.
Yeah, that's correct.
How does it work with setting up projectors and lights and all that? Can you leave that stuff out, or you have to like set up every day?
Ooh, if we had to strike every day, we'd be in trouble.
Yeah.
Yes.
That would be a lot of turnaround.
Mm-hmm. So we're loading in six. We're loading in 6 days before the show. And we're doing a layered load in. So we're starting with our power lighting truss, all in the infrastructure stuff in our front of house. And then we're doing that for 2 days, programming lights. Then we layer in the projectors and work on projectors. Then we layer in the sound system. The technology on this show is incredible. It's so cool. We got some of the best systems out there. And so we have a ton of beam moving light fixtures. You know, if you've seen the recent shows at Disneyland or Walt Disney World, where they're, you know, painting the sky with a bunch of beams, we will have a similar effect. The projectors that we have are these massive 40K projectors.
Wow.
Because the front of a bell tower is actually a terrible project surface.
It's dark. It's porous. Yep. It's far away.
Yep. All those things. And you want it to be able to stand up to the lights and the pyro. You don't want one of your show elements to be really dim and chumpy looking and then the rest to be very bright. So we have some good projection out there. And then the sound system is just the best of the best. It's a Meyer line array system, the exact same system they use at World of Color.
Yeah, the Meyer, it's higher end. We try to use those when we can, but they're more expensive, but always have good sound.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're working with incredible designers, Mark Caspery and Matt Glenn from Ears Up Design in Glendale. And they've worked on a lot of themed entertainment projects. So they've done work for the theme parks and various live experiences. And so with them, and Bell Events is our provider for a lot of our sound equipment. And
they're a local company, right? You've used
them
for Broadway.
They are. And they're so great to work with. And so they've designed a sound system that is just going to be incredible. I mean, you're not going to hear airplanes. You're going to hear us.
Considering we're, 2 miles away from LAX, that'll be impressive.
Yeah. And so it's 12 subwoofers. Like it's this is going to be massive and wonderful and just a totally immersive experience. So some cool technology out there. And then the whole show is fired by timecode. So just like the Disney shows, there's a show control element that syncs up all our systems. And we'll be testing that several days at our front of house and then, of course, running it on the final day. But we have a show control expert who's consulting with us and making sure that all our systems talk to each other so that when we press go, the whole show just goes.
Wow. Yeah, that would be nerve-wracking to me to just hit go and then step back and be like, well, we see what happens in 15 minutes when the show's over. See how that went.
Well, there's a lot of redundant systems. So you have two audio consoles, you have two pyro controllers. You know, it's like if one thing goes down, you literally just pull the data cable out of one and pop it into the other, and then it keeps going. And the systems are built so that if it loses sync, it will continue to run on its own internal clock. So it'll keep running SMPTE internally until it gets a new link, and then it will correct for any latency. Or problems that happened in the switchover. So, I mean, the systems are very safe. And we will be thoroughly testing them before the show. And then even then, during the show, you have an operator sitting at each system just to make sure it's running. It's not that they're pressing the go button on a stage manager's call, but, you know, you make sure that your computer doesn't crash and take down the whole show with it. So
yeah, loses power or something happens. It gets too wet outside because we are in a beach city.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was a lesson we learned with Broadway in the Park. All our distro for our power were like GFI boxes. And so if they got too moist, they would actually trip.
Yeah. Turn everything
and
off.
And sometimes in the middle of a show, we just had like a lighting tower go out. So we cannot take that risk. Obviously, we're setting up our equipment in a way that weather, you know, unless it's incredibly inclement weather, it won't keep our show from going on.
Nice. That's going to be so exciting. I'm very excited to go to rehearsal.
Yes.
And watch it.
It'll be a lot of fun.
And then while I'm at my show, I'll be like, oh, I'm missing a fireworks show right now. I'm dealing with serving people dinner. Not as exciting as a fireworks show.
Hopefully you'll still get to see all the projections and stuff, though.
Yeah. Yeah. It just won't be the same without, you know, a bunch of people and fireworks.
Yeah.
But you know, do what I can.
Yeah.
Still see some of it.
You'll get a lot of the good stuff.
Yeah. So excellent. We're probably pretty good on time. Probably really good on time. Is there anything else you want to say or talk about?
Wait, you didn't ask him. You didn't ask him the last question.
The last question is going to be kind of weird because you've been a friend of mine forever.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any twin stories? Anything twin related? It's very general question.
Got it.
Since the podcast called Twins Talk Theater, mm-hmm. We're like one of the first people we talked to is like, you should ask a question about twins. And so mm-hmm. It's like, okay, what's your twin story?
Nice. Well, I'm very thankful that you had enough distinguishing characteristics that you weren't throwing me for a loop every time I ran into you guys.
True.
Of course, it helped. You knew me for a little while before Cindy came out to visit.
Yes, that is true. That is true. You know, as you mentioned before, we have twin composers who are working on the show. And Jason and Nolan aren't quite as kind about giving you like the clear visual distinction. A lot of times they kind of go with the same hairstyle and the same way they dress and the same vibe. And so actually this ties in with the Norris. One time I was doing, I think it was Titanic. I was mm-hmm. in the stage reading of Titanic, or the concert version of Titanic.
The concert version, yeah.
And there was a live orchestra, and Nolan subbed in
one of the nights
as a violin player, because he's an incredibly talented violin player.
Yes.
He's played in Broadway pits and everything. And I saw him, and it took me a hot second to figure out which of the two brothers it is, because both of them play violin.
Mm-hmm. And both of them are really good at it, and both play in pits. Yeah,
yeah.
They do that.
And so, you know, it's like if you spend a lot of time with twins, you know those little tiny characteristics that distinguish them. But I had lost it. It had been a few years. So he's like, hey, Jeff. And I'm like, hey, man.
Like, Livesey brother.
Just trying to cover for it and trying to like ask leading questions to get him to reveal which one he is. And then, you know, I was like, you know, how about that Sound of Music at Broadway in the Park? He's like, oh, I had such a great time doing that. And I'm like, yes, me too, Nolan. So that's my twin story. Now I can tell them apart a little better because I've been spending a lot of time with them. But
when I look at pictures, I'm like, I think that's Nolan, because I've met Jason, but I've only ever really worked with Nolan.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, being a twin doesn't help. I'm still like, I think that's Nolan. But it might be Jason. And they have another brother who looks just like him, too. So it's like there's genes are very strong in that family.
Yes. Yes.
Excellent. Well, thank you for being on the podcast and telling us all the exciting things. I'm excited to definitely see the fireworks show, or miss half of the fireworks show. But the soundstage, definitely going to come around for that one. That sounds really cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm going to be like, how does this work? Now explain again how this cell phone is going to change things in this space.
Mm-hmm. So, it'll be so much fun. Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah. Anything good, Twin? Anything good? Anything
else?
Good.
No, I might have to look up some airplane tickets for this soundstage thing. So
Perfect. You'll have to come back
updated on that. Yeah.
Do it. It'll be super fun.
I know. It's my kind of stuff. Thanks so much, Jeff.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.